Greetings and welcome to another episode of the Wandering One podcast, brought to you by Wandering One Studios and yours truly, your host, Link Flores. Hello out there in podcast land. Thank you for taking some time out to listen to this podcast. Thank you all so very much for sharing it, rating it, commenting. We actually got a comment from somebody in the community from on Patreon, so I'll be doing a bonus episode of that. I meant to get through it sooner. But last couple weeks have been kind of crazy, and I'm going to be honest with you, it's drained me emotionally and mentally. Not only the hurricanes, but, you know, dealing with the family medical emergency, and then this week was just, we're going to get into it a little bit. I did mention it last time, was the Xbox having to be replaced slash repaired. It's been a really tumultuous past couple of weeks, but I do have plans for that episode. I have them sitting right in front of me right now, so I'll be able to sit down and record this morning, which is Wednesday, October 16th, 2024. We're going to get some stuff done today, baby. Trust me on that one. That's happening. It's been really great, though, to see the listenership ticking up a little bit. Getting that first comment back after so long with that one is super cool, so I'm hoping I can get that polished off and get you guys squared away with the This will be a free-for-everyone bonus episode for Patreon. And then I want to get another couple more questions if I can and create a subscribers-only special exclusive episode for the month of October. So write in with your questions. Go to patreon.com/wanderingonestudios. It's free to follow, so it's free to just jump in there and start answering. There's also some free bonus content up there as well. And then I want to do some subscriber-only stuff for the folks who have decided they wanted to support further and paid $3 per month to get extra content. We're finally going to get around to doing that. So thank you very much for your patience and for your understanding. It's been just bananas. And hopefully things, as we come to the end of the year, usually things kind of wind up for a lot of people. But I found that for me, when it came to podcasting or even with streaming, which I'll mention in a moment, that actually kind of tapers, like it's like the listenership and the viewership kind of trends up, but it becomes less hectic because everybody else is involved with their own family stuff. So I find that I have fewer obligations that are like kind of getting in the way, so to speak, of me producing content when it comes to this time of year. And I know how that sounds, you know what I mean? Like everybody else is doing something else, so I don't have to fuck with them. That's not what I mean. What I'm just saying is that, like, you know, without having to deal with a lot of the other stressors and other intervening factors, I'm a little bit more freed up, and it definitely makes things a little easier. I am hoping that I will get a special guest who may or may not be listening right now to join me for that episode. So if you have any questions, comments, concerns, if you maybe want my opinion or my take and maybe my guest's take, which I'm hoping will really happen, on a particular situation or scenario or question that you've got, feel free to message me over on Patreon at patreon.com/wanderingonestudios. And then, you know, just make sure that you put, you know, question for the bonus podcast in the title so I don't miss it or confuse it for anything else. So thank you very much for all of that. And again, thank you guys for watching me over on Twitch at twitch.tv/linkib, where I do like my gaming content and whatnot. I have been playing the Fragpunk beta, just didn't get to play much over the weekend, and we will discuss that a little bit later on here in this podcast episode, so keep your ears open for that. It's been, like I said, it's been a weird month. Just coming out of September into October, between Hurricanes Helene and Milton, like I said before, I had a family medical emergency to go tend to. And while things have worked out so far and everybody seems to be fine, there's also the issue of, you know, trying to take care of my own family, you know, just like the needs that we have in between hurricanes, you know, picking up supplies, checking on who needs what, getting groceries for the house, preparing in case we had to shelter anybody with us, you know, that kind of stuff. And while it might not seem like, you know, it's a real big deal, we don't usually keep that kind of stuff on hand. You know what I mean? It's not like I have a pantry or like a larder somewhere that's just stocked with, you know, goods and sundries that I can just parcel out as I need to. Because a lot of times that stuff needs to be repurchased or replenished. Yeah, food expires. Certain things get dusty or they wear out of use, or you know, batteries will drain. So you have to get everything charged up, ready to go, stocked up again. You know, and then there's also the people who are like, the end of the world's coming. What am I going to do to wipe my ass? And they buy like, unfortunately, they buy all the toilet paper in the Seven Kingdoms. And then there's the people who are legitimately trying to, like, for example, in the case of Milton, people who are directly in the storm's path and were heading north to flee the storm's more severe impacts, they come through and they consume all the resources along the way. So things like, you know, again, canned goods, pot, you know, just simple stuff like bread, eggs, milk, gasoline, bottled water, toilet paper, diapers, formula, all that stuff gets pulled off the shelves by people who live further south. So when we go to grab what we need while we're here in the state or in the, you know, the less affected areas, I mean, we're ass out. And sometimes you're able to get out and get what you need right away. And then sometimes there is something that's unaccounted for and you're like, oh shit, I need that thing. And then by the time you go out to go look for it or to pick it up, it's gone. And that was a real problem for a lot of people here in this area. Thankfully, oddly enough, as much as everybody was saying, and I hate that thing too, because like, people were, like I said, people were freaking out about the hurricane, which is natural and normal. But in this area, you know, we're usually pretty fairly well insulated from some of the more severe effects most of the time. But yeah, that didn't stop people from panic buying a lot of stuff. And you're just surprised at the stuff that people will buy in bulk. You know what I mean? Just because. Whether it's profiteering or just, you know, a lack of awareness about what you're really going to need and what you're really going to use. It happens quite a lot. And so you can't really prepare for that. You can't account for which direction people are going to freak the fuck out in. You just kind of got to deal with it. And then, you know, like I said, there's people who are informed about the situation or keeping you abreast of it, which was most of the people I knew. And then there's some people, especially via social media, like people that weren't in my friends and family circle necessarily, were going way too hard and freaking out way too much. In I'm not saying that they were making a mountain out of a molehill, but they were definitely kind of fanning the flames of the panic that people were already feeling and were already, you know, worried about their friends and loved ones and whatnot. And then that pushes them to do more extreme measures and so on and so forth. So that was definitely difficult to deal with. But yeah, I mean, we all made it out just fine. Everybody in our family has been, thankfully, been very well protected and cared for. I mean, looking after each other, obviously, but, you know, we've been very blessed in that regard. So yeah, that was a plus for us. Yeah, I mean, so outside of that, you know, I was trying to get, you know, my dental appointments taken care of, and I also need to get like some new glasses. One pair is so bad that they were giving migraines, which I mentioned before. The other one is on its way out, and I need to replace them too. The biggest issue has been finding a provider that takes the dental insurance, because we thought we had one. I guess I thought I had one, and then it turns out they've been changed. And then in looking for whomever would accept the changed one, they were like, oh, well, this place that we used to go to accepts it. And they're like, no, we don't. So I'm having to cancel that appointment. It would have been tomorrow, actually. So now I'm on the lookout for a new dentist entirely that will accept this insurance that we've got. And then, you know, I have to find, you know, the information about the plan, because for some stupid reason, you can't just go to this company and be like, yeah, it's this insurance. And it's like, oh, there's six different tiers. Find the one that's you. Find the area. This, that. I'm like, how much more of the work do I have to do? You know what I mean? You're already getting the money. You're not going to give any of it back. So why can't you at least make me finding a provider in this area easier? But I digress. I've always, let's put it this way. Since I was very young, and particularly during my like working career past, you know, living at home and being in college, I've actually always despised the insurance industry. And no, and never more than when I worked for Humana Insurance. I can say their name because it's been forever. You guys know insurance is basically a racket. They're thieves, and they offer very little for the amount of money that they make off of everyone, and especially for the headache and the havoc that they provide as an intermediary between you and whatever else it is that you're dealing with, whether it's dealing with a real estate contractor, a healthcare provider, like an automobile manufacturer. Insurance just gets in the fucking way. They don't help most of the time. And then when they do help, it's very begrudgingly and only insofar as they feel like they need to and what they can legally get away with while still getting your money. So I've always hated insurance. So now I've got to go back and dig through this all over again and hating every second of it. So I've been putting it off since I found out. But yeah, I can't put it off too much longer. I need to go to get obviously you need to get a physical every now and again. I'm not getting any younger, so there's going to be all kinds of fun, invasive procedures that are going to have to be taken. Whether you're a male or female, you probably know, and I got an idea of what these are probably going to be like. Definitely not a picnic to do any of this stuff, but got to get done. Same way you got to get your oil checked, and you got to get your car inspected or your house inspected. You got to inspect all the nooks and crannies on yourself too. So definitely got something going on. Obviously, I need a teeth cleaning. It's been a while. And I got some weird kind of like pinching kind of pain underneath my the left side of my rib cage, just right up underneath there. Sometimes it feels like a swelling, almost like somebody's got like a spiky balloon underneath my ribs. I don't like that, and that makes me feel really nervous and uncomfortable. So I'm gonna have to go and get that checked out, And then just basic, hey, am I dying right now? You never know what's going on. So the doctor's gonna have to get that glove and bend over and cough kind of thing, and not really looking forward to it, but I'm looking forward to, cancer or polyps or anything like that even less. So I'll take it. I'll deal with it. But yeah. So other than that, things are going better. We're trending upwards right now. And I don't mean just the podcast, I mean just in life in general. Just trending upwards. I made some more clam chowder the other day, which was a huge hit. I had to freeze some for my mom and my mother-in-law so they could get some. And then we've got maybe like a enough for like a bowl and a half still. I was tearing that up this week, so I've been having fun with that. But now I've got to make like a white chicken chili because we're supposed to have family over this week, and I wanted to have like another soup come in. And what a perfect time of the week that you would think to like have like a nice hearty soup. Today, as I woke up this morning, I was like, "Oh, what is going on here? It is delightful." Come to find out, it was actually like 62 degrees outside. I'm like, "Yes, finally, the cold weather is coming." And I was so excited. I got up. I'm like, oh, yeah. I love the cold. I can't stand the heat and humidity. And then I listened to the news. They're like, yeah, you can expect it to get even colder tomorrow. I'm like, oh, snap, son. Thursday's going to be even colder. What's up? And they're like, and in a warming trend through the weekend. Fuck. I was like, I'm so close. They're like, yeah, it's gonna warm up through the weekend into the 80s, going into the beginning of next week, low to mid 80s. I'm like, fuck, I hate it here so much. Oh, why can't we just have autumn like a normal, just like a normal part of the United States? Florida's always got to do some extra shit, man. It's annoying as fuck. Oh my God. It makes me really, as much as I hate saying this, just because, racism and whatnot, right? It actually kind of makes me miss Massachusetts and Chicago, just because at least I had the seasons. You know what I mean? And the racism is no different. It's more veiled and whatnot than it is down in the South. But at least then, I felt like I could deal with it if I get to watch the seasons change. You know what I mean? And in a weird way, I think because the weather got colder and whatnot, it kind of also cooled off tempers throughout the holiday season. So you didn't have it all year long. It stays so hot down here almost all the time that everybody's on edge, 80% of the fucking year. You know what I mean? You get that short little break in between the first and the beginning and the end of January, maybe into like maybe into February. And then after that, everybody's, it gets hot again. Everybody's blood goes up again. It's like, fuck. So, yeah, not really thrilled about that. But, I mean, hey, for the next couple days, it's going to be nice and cool. I'm going to enjoy opening the windows and taking advantage of letting some fresh air into the house for a little bit. Yeah, it's going to be good. We're going to make the most of it. I'm going to make that soup tomorrow. Super excited about that.
Get it super excited, man.
Ah, what a dork. But yeah, other, like I said, things are going all right. A couple little, you know, items of note, of course. We are still inside the election cycle, as you know. We still got another 2 weeks, 3 weeks, just a little under 3 weeks before the presidential election here in the U.S. Nobody's happy. Everybody's mad. And everybody's crazy, too. We're going to run through some of this stuff because there's just a lot of stuff going on and a lot of weirdness. God, where to begin? One of the biggest things for me that I've noticed recently is a lot of punditry going around saying that the Harris-Walz camp hasn't done enough, particularly pointing the finger at Kamala Harris to appeal to black men. And while I do admit that, you know, every vote counts and every part of your constituency is equally as valuable as the rest of it, I don't think that that's the case. I think that there's a lot of people who are seeing certain numbers trending in certain areas where black men are voting for Trump or at least intending to vote for Trump. But I also think that a lot of times, and this is just me as a black man, I don't want to tell you my fucking business. So you're going to these places, you're doing these polls and stuff, and you're asking these dudes, who are you going to vote for? And maybe somebody be like, yeah, I'm going to vote for Trump. Maybe some people are taking the piss, too. And you're going like, yeah, I'm voting for Trump. Woo-hoo, I swear. Yeah, give me your free t-shirt or whatever. I'm getting the fuck out of here. Some people actually are, but I'm willing to bet that a much larger than you would expect a contingent of black men are not voting for Donald Trump. More likely than not, because we have mothers and sisters and wives and aunts and, you know, cousins, you know, that we have to be accountable to. And they find out that that's who you voted for, you're going to have a lot of very unwelcome gazes over the table at, you know, the holiday dinners coming up. You don't want anybody to poison your sweet potato pie, you know, or serve you like a little side of arsenic gravy because you voted against their, you know, reproductive rights or, you know, their very existence as a person in the LGBTQ community. That seems like a shit way to go out for the holidays, right? Also, like I said, black men don't really put out like who, I mean, unless we're like more politically motivated. Yes, I might like someone like myself who's going to be a mouthpiece anyway, no matter where I'm at. I'm going to talk to you about the stuff because I feel like it matters. But, you know, if I felt like a little bit less secure in where I stood personally with just people in my neighborhood, people in my community, people in my own family, even maybe I'd be a little bit more reluctant to speak out. As it stands, I don't really have that problem, obviously, which is why I have a podcast. But no, I'm very outspoken about my own personal political beliefs because I feel like politics matter because it affects everything that we do in this country. It affects every aspect of our lives to some degree or another. And so I feel like it's in my own personal estimation, it's irresponsible to not have those conversations regarding politics, even religion to a certain extent as well, because those things do impact the way that you relate to one another as human beings. And even if you don't agree, you should at least be able to find some commonality where in your disagreement, you're not being disrespectful. There's a difference between being disagreed with and then being disrespectful. And so, I mean, that's pretty clear and obvious to anybody who can, you know, read past the eighth grade level. But you'd be surprised how many people can't. So it's all the more important to kind of let that stuff be known. But again, like I said, I don't think that Vice President Walz is really Vice President Walz. Already I'm giving Tim Walz the vice presidency right off rip. I mean, Vice President Harris is struggling necessarily with black men. I just think black men don't like to talk about the shit. And they definitely don't trust anybody who's a pollster or working, or who they might perceive to be working for the government. Like the innate distrust in the black and, you know, just the communities of color in general. The general distrust that we have for governmental agencies, for state and local police in particular, But just for the government in general, even the military, in a lot of ways, that's pretty well documented lore, and it's not for no reason. yeah, black men in particular, but people of color just in general have plenty of reason to be very dubious when it comes to having any dealings with governmental agencies, policing agencies, and the military. They have real good reasons to not like that. If you want to know what they are before they ban the books in your school or your local libraries, go and pick up a book on, just the history of minority people in the United States, particularly in the South, but also just around the country, and read about what's been done to black people, black men in particular, but like I said, people of color in general. You'll if you don't already know, you'll probably make yourself sick reading it. So yeah, I think that's really what it is. And while we may be, generally speaking, I would imagine like more of us than not are hoping for Vice President Harris, let me get that correct, to end up winning the election. We might be a little bit less vocal about it with people outside of our own families or our own communities. So that might be where that impression comes from. And it's a stupid one to make. It's a stupid assumption to make. But it's not unfueled by a couple of those mouthpieces out there, a couple of people out there that be wearing that coonskin cap a little too tight. So watching a couple of them on CNN, and this dude, I mean, you would have thought like he was Uncle Ruckus's nephew. Like if he could have sucked Trump off any harder, they would have had to put this thing on like pay-per-view. This couldn't be on cable. It was almost pornographic the way he was just riding Trump so hard. And I'm all for being supportive of your candidate, but this is starting to feel a little egregious to the point where I'm like, I don't think I want to watch this anymore. This guy looks like he might actually, finish himself off on camera right now. This is gross. And I just don't understand that. I mean, I can understand being, like I said, supporting your candidate is one thing, but he was so rah-rah Trump, you would have thought that they were dating. It was a little concerning, you know what I mean? Felt like those 80s movies were like, they got the cheerleader and the jock, and they're like the prom king and all that, prom king and queen. And she's so into her man that she's got hanging on him every second. Like, I think if Trump had walked into the room where that dude was recording, he probably would have been like, oh my God, yes. And just dropped his pants or something. I don't know. It was real weird and uncomfortable to watch. It also makes me really uncomfortable anytime I see black people caping for Donald Trump anyway, or anybody who's like super MAGA. It's like, I can understand being conservative and maybe having Republican views and maybe even being a Republican yourself. I could probably get away. I'd probably like let that slide. But these MAGA people, like they're, it's so clear that a part of their agenda is to dehumanize and basically devalue people of color, women, and LGBTQ persons. Basically anybody who's not a white male. Right? They don't even give a fuck about white women like that. Let's just be real. So anybody who's championing them that isn't exactly what their main focus is bothers me and disturbs me. When I see black men do it, it's borderline revolting. Like I want to throw up. So yeah, just I'm not going to be shy about that shit either. If I see somebody with a black dude with a MAGA hat on, like my face screws up like he just farted right in my mouth. I'm just like, ugh. Gross, dude. How can you even, And maybe that's just me being a little too judgmental, but I don't give a fuck because I think that that's a stupid position to have. It's like that cartoon where it says, it shows women for Trump on one side and on the other side, it says slugs for salt. And I'm like, do you see a difference? And I'm like, I really don't. I do think it's funny that Trump is like hiding the more recent health exams that he's had. Doesn't want anybody to know about those. Meanwhile, Vice President Harris has put hers out there. She's in excellent health. Aside from, they said, like, just seasonal allergies and hives. I think it was Jimmy Kimmel. It was like, gee, I wonder who could be giving Harris the blues enough. She's getting hives. And just, obviously it's the whole thing about anytime you run for the presidency or you become the president, it ages you. And I think that's what's happening right now. Just because this race is so contentious. But yeah, I mean, you just don't know. And you don't know the depths to which these people will sink. That's the thing I think that scares me the most. I don't trust politicians in general as a rule, but I think that the MAGA camp is actually way more insidious, and they're way more dangerous because their supporters are willing to believe anything, and they will do almost little to nothing to fact check what they see, to corroborate with other outside sources. And I don't mean just going to the left side. I mean, like, you know, you can aggregate when you look at a bunch of different reporting on a certain story or issue. You can kind of put together like, okay, there's a through line that runs through all of this reporting. Whether it's left, right, center, whatever, you can kind of see that there's at least a through line of what appears to be the truth or as close to the truth as possible. And that should allow you to make some discernment calls as to what you should be focusing on. I feel like the lack of critical thinking ability that anyone who falls for a cult, which is essentially what MAGA is, anybody who falls for a cult, the lack of, like I said, just critical thinking ability and also self-preservation, you know, like the ability to think logically and go, hey, man, this isn't a good idea to stick this fork in this light socket. Not possessing that gene, I think, is a key marker of somebody who falls for a cult. And so I'm not really surprised that they do. I'm just surprised that they continue to fall for it. Especially when the man has looked you in the eyes and said, I don't care about you. I just want your votes. I plan to be a dictator on day one. Who's going to let what dictator is going to let go of that kind of power? Like, you gave me this power, but I promise just for a day, then I'm going to hand this right back and everything's going to be hunky-dory and no one is ever going to possibly turn around and use these exact same powers against you, right? That kind of dopey-ass, you know, smooth brain logic just goes right past me. But he does it all the time and he lies actively. Like I said, we talked about, and the people around him I think are scary too, what I was saying, is that like everyone around him is just a little bit smarter than he is, but they weren't clever or charismatic enough to get into the hearts and minds of these dummies so that they could affect them. Because like these stupid people don't really like smart people, right? And without really giving them too much credit, some of these folks are actually just a significant enough, possessed significant enough amount of intelligence over Donald Trump that they're not appealing to a dumbass. So any dumbass person is going to look at other dumbass people and be like, huh, you're like me. Let's hang out and be friends. But then they see somebody smart. They're like, nerd. And they're throwing rocks at him and shit. It's a very Cro-Magnon kind of way, like caveman way of thinking. And so like the more intelligent people, even though they're definitely evil people, the more intelligent people in the MAGA camp kind of aren't as attractive to them as Trump is, because he's, you know, he's down in the muck with them, you know what I mean? But that makes them even more dangerous because the stupid people won't see how these smart people are going to manipulate the shit out of them. And then when they finally realize what's happened, they'll be like, oh, what happened? And they're like, yeah, you were such a dumbass there, you know, throwing turds with your orange friend there, that you forgot to pay attention to all the incredibly just underhanded and devious shit these guys were doing the whole time. They're manipulating his dumbass just the way they manipulated you, and you dummies walked us right to the gallows with them. You know, it's clear when you start to look at how they interact with the public. Like just looking at the last podcast, we talked about how Trump had a business. I'm trying to remember if it was Ohio. I think it was somewhere in the northern Midwestern area. A business was destroyed by a tornado and they took the bricks from the building and created this like makeshift podiums wall kind of thing in front of where he was going to talk, in front of the destroyed building, right? Something so gross that you take somebody else's tragedy and you literally campaign on it, like literally standing on the ruins of their livelihood. And you're like, we're going to do such a great job. We're going to have more buildings. We're going to build more jobs. And this guy's fucked behind me, but whatever. Look at these bricks. They're beautiful bricks. We got a lot of bricks. Like, yeah, fuck this guy. Well, guess who else did it? Old Rhonda Santis, or Rhonda Satan, did the exact same thing just this past weekend by using debris from the aftermath of Hurricane Milton to dress up the stage that he was going to be speaking on. Now, there's no more, I'll see if I can find another one of the videos. I've been seeing over several different sources. There's no more telling sign of just how weak and desperate these people are, in particular Ron DeSantis. Now, Ron DeSantis, even though he's the governor of Florida, that guy could kiss both sides of my ass and make which one jealous he wants. I hate that guy. Everything about him is flawed, evil, and ugly. He's a despicable human being, and he'll take credit whenever he can for anything that's not his fucking, you know, doing, just so he could try to win some political points. But in the meantime, he's always got the dagger right behind his back, ready to stick into yours. And he literally has a clear and obviously functional street. Traffic is flowing behind him. The sun is shining. The streets are cleared. And he has people, and it looks like the National Guardsmen who are helping with the cleanup effort, throw debris from the hurricane onto the ground behind where he was going to be standing. And then they brought in another truck full and were unloading that. And then he had the speech, and then they had them clean it all up and then throw it away. That is a despicable fucking thing to do. You know what I mean? What you could have done was campaigned on the solution. You know, hey, we've got the National Guard here. We've got FEMA here. Money is coming in from the government to help rebuild businesses and infrastructure. I mean, shit, look at how nice it looks right now. Like, just, you would never believe that maybe a couple of days ago, this was all underwater. Businesses were torn down. There's garbage and stuff all over the streets. And look at the wonderful progress that's been made in cooperation with the folks in the government and FEMA. And you could thump your chest and be like, I, as your Republican leader in the state of Florida, have done this for you. That would be something to campaign on instead of being like, oh, pobrecito, look how bad it is. Of course, he wouldn't do it in a, you know, Mexican accent because he's a fucking, ooh, I hate this guy so much. Oh my God, I could never meet him. I could never meet him. I'd spit on him in public. I just know it. My reflex reaction would be to spit on him or to jump on him and just beat his ass. So I know I can never meet him in person. But yeah, it was just disgusting to watch him do that. And they said you could have run on the solution. You know, it was also even more disgusting to hear like the rumors being drummed up that armed militia in North Carolina were going to be attacking FEMA members who are going to be dispensing aid and, you know, helping with the sick and the relief effort, you know, cleanup and stuff like that. So much so that FEMA took the wise step, honestly, of being like, then don't fucking go. Leave the state. Get out of there. We'll send you someplace where they're not going to try to shoot you until you get this thing sorted out. And it turns out that they did. It was largely the work of one man who became his own rumor mill. And then because, you know, like I said, none of these idiots ever checks anything. They don't verify shit. They just grab a story, run with it, and be like, And then they're like, yeah, well, it was just Frank. Whatever fucking guy's name was. I didn't even want to learn his name. I didn't want to give him that much credence. But the problem is that because one person was able to affect such a wave of hysteria, he actually derailed efforts to help people in his own community. Again, so stupid. You work counterintuitively to your own best interest. Just for fucking what? Seriously, for fucking what? What did that benefit him at all? He's going to jail. He's going to jail right now for this shit. What did you win? Did you get your MAGA prize? No, you didn't? Well, guess what, motherfucker? They're not going to send it to you in jail. That's the thing that irritates me about this whole camp of MAGA stupidity. Like, you're actively working against your own self-interest, against your communities, against your families, against yourself. You will actively do stupid shit to destroy everything around you just so somebody in a blue tie doesn't get to sit in an Oval Office for 4 years. It's worth that much to you to sacrifice everything that you say that you consider to be near and dear to you for the sake of a political ideology that doesn't give a single solitary flying backwards fuck about you or anyone you know and love. You are willing to dismantle your own families, even. It's mind-bogglingly stupid. I don't know how dumb I'd have to be able to sign on for that. I really don't. Like, I halfway imagine if these people were any stupider, as I like to say, you'd have to put them in potting soil and set them in direct sunlight. You're a fucking houseplant at this point. You're just being guided by whatever, you know, gives you the most water and sunlight come from here. And like, come on, man. Like, I don't, shit bothers me the fuck up, man. It really does. I gotta think about something else. I mean, I'm still irritated, so I'm gonna talk about this real quick. We're gonna switch gears from the negativity of, you know, Trump and the MAGA morons and DeSantis. And we'll talk about how shit Best Buy is. You guys remember I was talking about Brian Simpson. One of the things he said, it's been a while since he said it on his podcast, but I was catching up. And just like a month or so before my whole Xbox woes came to light, he mentioned that he had tried to purchase something and use the protection plan through Best Buy and that they were shit and never to shop with them again. The only unfortunate thing about that is there aren't a lot of electronic store options out there. Like, you know, if you're going to go buy household electronics, Best Buy's pretty much it. You know what I mean? You've got some of your big box stores, you know, like Walmart or Target, but they don't have like a real solid, defined technology grasp. They're just kind of offering a bunch of shit that people need or want, right? And Circuit City and Radio Shack are long since dead, so good luck with that. Fry's doesn't really exist out here. So unless you're ordering this shit from a company online or, you know, you're going to roll the dice at whatever big box international or national chain there is, you're kind of at Best Buy's mercy. They got you by the short and curlies. My wife and I bought Xbox Series X consoles, and mine over the last couple of months had been, I think I mentioned this before, had been quitting in the middle of games and would quit to the Xbox home screen. Sometimes it won't even turn all the way on. And then at the times when it does, sometimes it will just stay on the Xbox logo screen for 10, 15 minutes at a time without even clicking over until you power cycle it and then try it again. And then wait for it to start. And then it takes another 3 minutes for it to load. It's just been a fucking scene. So we figured out this workaround because the protection plan says, essentially, if your console's malfunctioning, they have to prove that they can't fix it, right? Because how many of the Geek Squad do you think are licensed Microsoft technicians? None. So what they do is they take your console and then they ship it to Microsoft. Microsoft does their evaluation on it and they decide either, we fixed it. We put new gears and parts and whatnot into this thing and we send it back to you. Or if they figure they can't fix it, here's the kicker. They don't send you a new Xbox, even though yours could be less than a year old, which is exactly the case with mine. They'll send you a refurbished Xbox. You can send me some used bullshit. I bought a brand new console and you're going to send me a used bullshit console. Man, fuck y'all, dude. And Best Buy is really not much better than that. You know what I mean? They're really not. Because what they're doing now is they're saying like, oh, if we can't fix it. One of the things they said, which turned out we found out was kind of incorrect, was that if they couldn't get it fixed through their program with Microsoft, that they would offer you a credit for the amount of the purchase price of the item that you bought. Which essentially means they're just going to credit us back the money we put it on our account and buy another Xbox. So we're like, you know what? Fuck it. We got Best Buy credit cards. We got a little bit of playing room on them. We're going to get you an Xbox today that you can walk out of here, go home with. And then if and when they figure out what they're doing with the old one, whether you get it back and it's or you get a refurbished one, which is fucking bullshit, then we can return this new Xbox within 60 days. No harm, no foul. Get our money back. No questions asked. I'm like, you could be like, oh, it's day 59 and bring it back and be like, what happened? Don't want this no mo. And they just got to give you your money back. You know, they really can't even ask you a question. Like, I just don't want this. Give me my money back. And they got to do it. So that's kind of like the loophole we got to work around because I need the system for streaming and stuff like that. I don't need it. Like, I'm not going to stop breathing. It's not like food or oxygen or a place to live. I'm going to be fine if I don't have an Xbox. But it's my primary source of streaming content. So I kind of do need it to do the streaming stuff that I do. But when we get it back, whether it's a, you know, refurbished one or my old one with new guts inside of it, We could just take this one back and get it swapped out. But here's the real stupid thing about this, right? You're going to do that anyway. You're either going to put brand new parts into an old Xbox and send it back to me, or you're going to give me one that you worked over and did the exact same shit to. So why not just send me the new Xbox, save yourself the time and labor, and then instead of having to dump a bunch of new stuff into another console, pay somebody to fix the shit, take however long it takes, you're wasting man hours, time, and money. You've already sold this one Xbox. Send me a new one. Call it a day, happy customer, right? Because the worst case scenario is maybe I'm shining you on and I'm so stupid that I sent a perfectly working Xbox back. Or maybe I'm just unaware of what I could do to fix it at home with like simple hot, you know, simple fixes, you know, whatever. I did all the normal stuff you think you do. Unplug, plug it in, reset it, restart it, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Short of sacrificing a fucking goat to the thing, I did everything I could think of to do within reason to get it to work, and it wouldn't. So if I just either missed something or I don't know, thought I was going to scam you out of a new Xbox, why would I send back one that works? You know what I mean? Like, who's doing that? Because then it means I'm a moron. At that point, you just got a stupid customer, but then you got his money anyway. So what the fuck's matter? And if you're going to get an Xbox from me that's broken or is malfunctioning in some way and you get it back and you refurbish it, you just give me the new one. I'm going to walk out with the thing anyway. I already paid for one, so I just got one-to-one exchange as far as I'm concerned. But now you've got a brand new, well, not brand new, but you've got another console that you're going to refurbish, and you're going to just put that work and effort into it and resell it. Why waste the time in trying to get me to take the old shit back? You could just keep the old one and resell it to somebody else. Somebody will buy it. There'll be somebody out there who wants one, and they might not want to pay $500-$600 for one, but they'll pay $300-$400 for one, and the holiday season's right around the corner. You just lost out on making yourself extra money. It's such a stupid thing. Because if I send it back to you and you just go like, yeah, give them one right now. Send us back this. We'll be like, yeah, you know, just take this and we'll do a one-on-one trade. You give us your broken one. We'll give you this new one. Here, get the fuck out of here. Give us this old one. We'll fix it back up. Put it on the shelves. Mark it down like 20%. We'll still make some money off of it. That guy already bought one. Somebody else will buy it too. It's such a smoother process. It's such a smarter way to do business. And you're cutting down on the amount of overhead and time it takes to get this stuff done. You could be making more money. You know what I mean? It's such a stupid and inefficient way of doing business. I've been so pissed about this whole thing with Best Buy and Microsoft for days. I was so frustrated when I was there. I almost started crying out of sheer just frustration and fury because I wanted to put my hands on somebody. Because I'm like, this is stupid. It's a stupid problem to have. It's a stupid way to do business. And it makes no sense to have somebody sitting here frustrated over this shit. You could have just handed me one because you were going to have to honor the return policy anyway. Just hand me a new one. I walk the fuck out. Everybody wins, right? You still get that. I don't understand what the thinking is behind them not doing that. God, it was so infuriating. I hated that whole scenario. Thankfully, my wife was there and she was like letting the cooler head prevail. If it had been me, I might have been on the news. You know what I mean? But yeah. So then after that, you know, we stopped and just checked out. Like there was a Nintendo display there. They were showing off the OLED Switch, which is cool. I can't justify buying it because mine works perfectly fine right now. But I like the OLED Switch. I like the larger screen size, the brighter color, you know, on the brighter display and everything like that. I think it's like a little bit heavier than the original Switch that we have. But I got to check out Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom, which I actually bought that day. And I haven't had a chance to play it, but I'm thinking I'll probably play it today during my stream. So if you hear this podcast sometime between, I don't know, 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, flip on over to twitch.tv/linkib. I'll play a little bit of Fragpunk, which I'm going to talk about in just a moment, and some Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom, so you guys can get a peek at that as well. But right now, since we're here and I just mentioned it, let's talk about some other happier stuff. You know, like again, like I said, the console's here. It's gonna, whatever's going to happen is going to happen to it. Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom is here. Super happy about that. Looking forward to playing some of that. There was some news out. This is in case I get a chance. I'm going to make sure I email the homie Brian Simpson, who I doubt plays Minecraft, but is a fan of the James Webb Telescope. It turns out there's some James Webb Telescope DLC going into Minecraft. I think it's like trivia, and you know, obviously there's like a build profile or something like that to make. I thought that was pretty nifty. But then, you know, we got to remember, I was in the Fragpunk closed beta right now. Currently, I'm at day 5 of the weekly logins that they're giving away. Like, there's like daily logins for like 7 days, and I'm like right at the cusp of, I got day 5 today. I got to get a sign in a couple more times to finish off the trees there. But yeah, early impressions of Fragpunk. And just in the closed beta, we're going to start with the cons to get them out of the way, because there aren't a lot, but they are noteworthy. One of the cons that I heard, but I never really personally experienced but once, was laggy wait times. You know what I mean? Like, you're sitting in line to get into a match with a bunch of other people, and then the wait was dragging people down. Just sitting and twiddling your thumbs while you could have been doing something else was a pain. Partly because they have this ability, while you're waiting for the match type that you're looking for, they can allow you to either enter a training mode or an AI bot session, or you can actually play a match that doesn't count for any points against, it's a skirmish basically, against a couple of other living players. Those things are all well and good, but when that ended up becoming the bulk of the gameplay while you were waiting for the thing you wanted to do, that got really annoying. Because it only happened to me like once, maybe twice, but both times it happened, it just seemed interminable. Like, that skirmish match lasted way longer than an actual match of the game probably would have. So I can get that complaint because I actually experienced it. And I'm like, yeah, that's really kind of shit. I went to their Discord server for Fragpunk. And their Discord server is kind of a wreck. Not to be mean to them or anything like that, but just to be quite honest, there are they will occasionally publish a post to a certain channel. Let's say that they're doing one right now where they're debuting the cards that we mentioned before. The cards are literally an actual, like, almost playing card style item that you break or tear in half, and that adds a certain element to the gameplay that twists up the gameplay. It could be it changes the weather, it could be it makes the other team have big heads, it could be enhanced health regeneration, whatever, right? So they're matching these two cards against one another based on the idea of what they do. This is a jumping thing. So the game has like a jump height of maybe 2 feet. So, you know, your average human is not going to be able to jump 3-4 feet high in the air. But this is a video game, right? And they're supposed to be super powered characters. So the fact that they can only jump 2 feet high is a little stupid to me personally. Plus, given the verticality that's put into the build, into the game itself, only being able to jump 2 feet seems a little stifling. That's probably the best word to put. So then they decided we'll give them a charged jump where you hold down the jump button instead of just tapping it to jump. You hold it down, you charge your jump, and then you can leap higher, and then you can create a shockwave impact where you land that can either damage or knock down enemies. Or you can get a double jump, which basically increases your vertical from 2 to 4 feet, which is really nothing in the grand scheme of how a lot of other games experience a double jump. And then, like, it gives you a plus 100% to your vertical. Oh, cool. Because I don't think it's even really 2 feet. I think it might be like a foot and a half in the game's terms. So you get to jump 3 feet high. I'm like, all right, so that's your average, you know, high school basketball player. You can jump 3 feet up. Neat. Way to go for a super-powered soldier. This is super awesome. But in the meantime, when I was looking at that particular thread in the Discord channel, they like vote for one of these cards. There was no way to do that. They said use this emoji or this emoji, but then they locked the thing from being able to, you know, take comments. So it's like, well, this was a waste. And then a lot of the engagement is basically just them saying like, who likes this? And then it's just the flags of the different countries just being put into there, which, I mean, 6-1, if doesn't the other, whatever. You get an idea of where your player base is coming from. But at the same time, this is a really, really small sample size compared to the probably thousands of people who are currently playing it. You might have maybe a couple hundred in the Discord server, maybe a couple thousand at the most, as opposed to, I don't know, maybe 12,000 maybe are playing it right now in the beta. Yeah, it seems like it's kind of a mess there. But that's not the game itself. That's just a little side note. They could definitely work on their Discord servers and being better about that, especially when it comes to engaging with the community and taking their feedback. You have to be able to give people the opportunity to give feedback. Like, there was no can comment here. There was no can emote here, or, you know, react to a post, or, you know, all I could do is just think to just write them a message directly via Discord. I'm like, well, that's cool, but I mean, your inbox is going to get packed if you have to do this every single post instead of just letting people respond here and answer them in the chat flow. So whatever, man. But those are like just a couple of the minor concerns. The user interface, while it's very bright and colorful, is very cluttered and clunky. Using your shoulder and trigger buttons to navigate the menus, it takes a little getting used to, which you can do, but it also is a little muddied when you consider the fact that on top of that, instead of being able to scroll through menus in line, like, you know, in columns or rows with using your thumbstick, they give you a mouse pointer/cursor. I'm of two minds about this, because a lot of other games do this kind of floating cursor thing to make it look like a PC game, but it's not right now. It's on console. So streamlining the user interface without adding a third layer of interaction is a smarter move than trying to make it look cool for the people who are going to be playing with mouse and keyboard. Let them have that option, but if you're going to play with a controller on console, or even on your PC, you should have to switch to a more console-friendly user interface. And like I said, the scrolling back and forth between menus, like scrolling left and right, like flipping pages, wouldn't be so bad by using the shoulder or trigger buttons if it weren't for the fact that this floating cursor, which you have to use to indicate a particular choice inside each one of those pages, is a very pale teal blue with a white outline kind of thing. And it's about the size of an actual mouse pointer, like what an actual mouse pointer would be on your screen if you were playing on your PC. So it's very, very small. Even playing on my TV, which I believe this one is a 57-inch screen. This thing is probably the size of the tip of my pinky, which is very, very small considering that screen size. So it gets lost quite often. And when it gets lost, it's almost impossible to find until you spin the thumbstick around enough to see, oh, there it is. And because, like I said, the backgrounds are so, the menus are so incredibly, they're color rich. They're very vibrant. They're beautiful to look at. There's like a great visual style overall to the user interface, the design of the game, the art design, as far as like in general, character and level design is fantastic. But, you know, it gets that little stupid cursor gets lost, and then scrolling back and forth using your thumbs, you know, using your triggers and mouses and shoulder buttons, it just adds another layer of complexity that it doesn't need. The game is fairly complex on its own, just by the way that it's been crafted. I've never been a big fan of the games where you have to have a buy phase in between rounds. You use a weapon, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I can't use that one again. Oh, yeah, because you used it once. Now you have to use a token to buy a different weapon. What the fuck is that for? You only get the tokens really when you win or at the beginning of each new set of matches, right? So after every match, you know, you have rounds in each match. And win, lose, or draw, you win or lose a match, fine. You go and wait in line for your next match. Then you get a refresh on that, right? But if you win, it feels like you got, like, extra ability to use a weapon over and over again, which to me doesn't necessarily incentivize wanting to play those types of matches. I would rather just play the traditional team deathmatch mode that a lot of us are familiar with. Or there's another one called Capture the Core, where you run around and you capture this particular core, you drop it down, you activate it, you know, this kind of, you bring stuff back and forth. Yeah, it's capture the flag kind of thing. I'd rather play those kind of match types where, one, you don't have to bother with the pay point system for getting, you know, weapons that you can select from. But also, once you get killed, that's it. You just sit there watching the match. I would rather leave. Like, if I'm gonna get killed and have to sit here and watch the entire match, I'd rather not play. And I definitely won't play those match types at all. There's actually a couple of instances like that in Destiny. One of the most noteworthies are like the Crimson Doubles or anything in the Trials of Osiris. It's like a team, usually it's either like doubles is obviously 2v2. The Trials of Osiris is generally speaking like a 4v4 combat mode. I think it's 4v4. But either way, whatever happens is you have a bank of lives, and once you run out of those, you're just out, and then it just down to whoever has the most amount of lives left or who is still left standing. Or you just get eliminated all the way down to the last man. So if you get caught in the first couple, you know, 10, 20, 30 seconds of a match, you're sitting there for however long it takes for them to fight this thing out, and you're stuck. I've always hated that. It's not a fun way to play. I get why they do it, but it's definitely not a match type I play on a regular basis. I think the last time I played Trials of Osiris personally was probably about 7 years ago. So that's how long it's been since I engaged in Trials of Osiris, and that's how much I hate that kind of gameplay, where if you get dropped, you're just out and it's over. I never really liked that. It might be for some, definitely not for me. That's just a personal gripe, so it's not like a bad thing about the game. What is bad about the game is the movement speed. Some of the cards allow you either a movement speed boost for a short duration of time. Some characters also have certain mechanics that allow them to either sprint or dash for a moment, or teleport even. So one character is able to slide, which is kind of fun and interesting because it's a mechanic that I'm familiar with from other games, where you can sprint for a little while, then you can slide for a little while, stand up, run and sprint, then slide. It increases your movement speed a little bit, but it's not enough for as kinetic as this game seems like it wants to be. The movement speed is really slow. When you do find a combatant, it's over pretty quick. You got like maybe like a 2-3 second window before you're getting fed your own ass with bullets. But once you hit that interaction, it's very kinetic. It's hot and it's quick, and the action is just right there in your face. The powers and abilities that they have are all pretty flashy and unique and interesting. My one, I think, complaint with it being a hero shooter is give us either the powers and let us figure it out with like the weapons that we have with those powers, or give us the guns and make the powers exist on a much longer cooldown, but not both. Because it's another problem that you have when it comes to balancing, which Destiny struggles with all the time, is you have insane powers and abilities that can be, you know, sped up or, you know, slowed down depending on how you've built your character, right? That's not necessarily the case with a game like this. Everything kind of regenerates as it would normally. You know, there's no perks or boosts or anything like that for the most part that allow you to regain your abilities in a faster, more timely fashion, so you can tilt the scales of battle in your favor. But what it does is it makes these abilities look really, really cool, except for the fact you can only use it once, and then it's kind of gone. The more latent abilities are more readily available, but some of the more high-powered abilities and whatnot are pretty much a one and done. Once you use it, you're waiting around for a hot minute to get it back. Now, some of those timers have been slowed or maybe removed entirely for the beta to give you a better sense of how to play with it. But you could tell once they get to a point where they start balancing, a lot of this stuff is going to go away because it's either going to be super overpowered, or because they have this interesting mechanic where you can kind of like an Overwatch sort of, it's always a roll queue. So you can only pick one of a particular character at the same time. So you can't have multiples of character B or character A or whatever. You could just have like one of that guy, one of that guy, one of that gal, one of that gal. That's it. That's an interesting way to approach it. But it also can mean that sometimes you could be very good with the character, but you're not fast enough on the draw and you're ass out. That was one of the issues that I had when I first started playing Overwatch, is I was very good with the character named D.Va, who has a like rabbit style looking mech that turns into an exploding ball. I was very good with D.Va, and then I would start playing with this one individual, and they would consistently like scroll through the tabs and choose D.Va right away every single time. No matter how, I mean, every now and then I get a hold of it once or not, but I'm not trying to make a race to get the character that I like or that I'm skilled with. And then the other thing that was fucked up about it is somebody else can really like a character but be really bad with them, and then their lack of skill or ability costs you a match. You're like, dude, if you stopped doing that and let me play as that character, I'm actually good with them, we could win. And they're like, but I look pretty, blah, 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 blah. And then they get murdered and lose the game for everyone. It's frustrating. But again, like, it's so pretty to look at. And the matches are, each round in each match can be pretty quickly won within a matter of maybe a minute or two. So while you would have like some, the match play can be quite extensive, you know, with the best out of seven approach, the real issue would end up being if you have it dragged out for any of the reasons that I mentioned that aren't fun, it can be very tedious to wait through. But that said, the cards and abilities are a very interesting twist to the gameplay. It does add like a little bit of extra flavor to it that I was not 100% sure I was going to embrace as readily as I did. Like, I knew I was going to like it because it was a novel idea. I didn't realize how much fun it would be once it started playing itself out. I think the only downside is that, again, some of the effects are timed. And I could understand, like, you select the card at the beginning of the match, that's it. And maybe there's obviously cards that could be selected throughout the match, but I never was able to figure out exactly how to do it. And so, like, every time I would start a match, it would just crush a card. And I'm like, I didn't even do that. It was just making me use a card right away. And I may have wanted to save that card. I may have wanted to save that for, like, you know, 60 seconds into the match when I really needed or wanted it. And now it's just gone. So I can never really quite figure out how to use the card. I'm sure with a little bit of practice, I probably will figure it out. But, you know, again, those kinds of things can be frustrating right off rip, and that can stagger. It could, like, maybe, you know, shut down a lot of players' desire to explore further. But like I said, overall, like I said, with these, you know, there's always a plus and a minus, it feels like, when I'm talking about a game like this, because it is an early impression and it is a beta and none of the stuff is fully finalized yet. Like, the release date isn't until December. So this is more of like a test of what things are as close to polished as they could possibly be, and whether or not they need to scale back certain things, flip some things around, you know what I mean? Pull a couple of switches, flip a couple levers, that kind of thing. Who knows? Overall, if you're asking me, would I play Fragpunk? Absolutely. I would definitely play it. There are mode and match types that I enjoy. There are some characters that are still as yet unlocked and that will be unlocked throughout the next couple of days of the beta. And once I have a chance to play with them, I'll give you my impressions of those characters as well. I did have a list. I can say that right off rip, my favorite character so far has been one named Pathogen. Pathogen is a lady who's a scientist and she's immune to poisons, but she can create like these mushroom fields. One is a poison mushroom field that does damage over time. And the other one is a healing mushroom field that obviously does healing over time for you and your allies. She can create like a door out of fungi to like, or like a wall or barricade. So she can put it inside a doorway and it blocks the doorway off. Or she can set it up as like a barricade in front of incoming fire to kind of help give you a chance to escape or mitigate damage coming in, which is really fun. One thing I will say, like, the character design is very intriguing. They're all very richly animated, designed, and detailed. These folks love them some booty meat, because I'm not going to front, every female character in here is packing some hips, and them hips don't lie. It's very Shakira up in that game. And some of their cutscenes are, like, the intro scenes in particular, when you see the characters, they're letting you know. And we worked a lot on sculpting these polygons to create the perfect ass. And you gotta give them props. They did a good job. But then also, like, the male characters are very swarthy, and, you know, they've got, like, this kind of steampunk isn't quite the right word, but, like, cyberpunk more. Cyberpunk grunge, you know, kind of aesthetic to a lot of them. Or, you know, yeah, very Borderlands-y meets cyberpunk kind of feel, which is really great. The visual style, like I said, is amazing, and I love the artwork. And, you know, the sound effects are really snappy and spot on. One thing you will know is that footsteps are equally loud no matter who it is. Friend or foe, you can't really tell. In a lot of other games, your foe's footsteps are just a little bit louder. In this one, everybody sounds the same. So you're going to keep your head on a swivel which means you're also, like I said, movement speed being as slow as it is, you're going to want to turn up your turn acceleration or your look acceleration a little bit more so you're not constantly being snuck up on, which was an issue that I ran into quite a lot. But yeah, overall, I mean, if I'm asked to play it, I will definitely play it. I'll play the match types that I feel comfortable with. I'll be fire to the rest, which is kind of what I've done with Destiny. And initial impressions, I don't want to give it a score. You know what I mean? I'll just kind of give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And I'd say overall, this is a thumbs up. I think that especially if you like first-person shooters, if you're looking for something a little bit off the beaten path, something a little bit more engaging, colorful, and a little bit. I mean, there is an element of strategy here that you need to be aware of. But if you're looking for something that's going to kind of scratch all those itches and maybe you'll miss one or two marks, it's fun. It's fun and it's a good time. I do have one Steam activation code for the beta that I'll be giving away during today's stream. If I happen to get another code, I will make sure to make that available. Unfortunately, for those who are out there on Xbox, this game is only currently giving out Steam beta activation keys, but this code will get you in for the rest of the beta. So hopefully if you're in there and you like Steam, you'll actually pull up one of these, you'll get one of these keys. I should maybe get another one today. But if I do, I'll make sure I make those available. And you know what? We're going to close this off with some other good news, for me at least, and for me and my peoples. Yeah, gridiron gripes isn't really the right word, because it's like, you know, some gridiron congratulations. Yeah, I told you guys I knew this week's game was going to be rough, and I was right. While I didn't get to watch the Steelers versus the Raiders, the Steelers came out on top 32-13 in just an absolute rout, which is awesome. So congratulations to the Pittsburgh Steelers going up to 4-2 against the Las Vegas Raiders, who are 2-4. And oh man, boy, I gotta tell you, Jacksonville was really looking awake this time around. Let's put it that way. They look like they've been asleep on the field most of the time than they've been playing. But this time around, they actually came to life. And it was pretty impressive to see them try to put up a fight against Chicago. But I think Chicago kind of had enough of being the lovable losers and really took Jacksonville to task, taking them out 35-16. An excellent gameplay for the Chicago Bears. Again, still kind of feels like kind of a backhanded compliment because you were playing Jacksonville. So it's not like you was, you know, beating up on the biggest, toughest kid on the yard. You know what I mean? But hey, a game is a game is a game. A win is a win is a win. And Chicago comes out of that one 4-2 over the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are now 1-5. Oish. It's rough. And there's been a lot of talk about how the Jaguars' general management is really their biggest failing. And I tend to agree, because I do believe that there's a lot of good play calling that happens on the field. There's a lot of talent that's available. But the inability of the management to kind of cultivate a cohesive unit on the field and in the locker room is starting to show a lot. When you look around and you see other former Jaguars players in different positions around the NFL coming back to Jacksonville to beat the piss out of them, it's upsetting. It's upsetting. Like, that guy was still good and you let him go. That guy was working up and you traded him and now he's this against us. Like, what do you mean? So if you're a Jaguar, you got to be looking at it from that perspective. Now, as far as a fan goes, I'm like, this is embarrassing. You know, they just voted in to build a new stadium actually this week. And why? Why do you need a new stadium? You need a new general managing staff. That's what you need. You don't need a new stadium. Everbank Field is fine just the way it is. Stop building new shit and making more, and it won't even be done for 4 fucking years. Stop doing that. Don't build a new stadium. Build a new offense. Build a new general managing core. You know what I mean? Like, you need to work on that shit before you bother getting flashy stuff. You know, it's not going to help anybody. Who's going to want, I mean, you're going to go see the stadium for the first day to see how cool it is to look at it, but then you're going to watch them lose there every week? That's just disappointing. I wouldn't be surprised if ticket sales start to slough off after this next year or so. Because if this season is any indication, in the early, just, I mean, we're just barely 6 weeks in, not even 6 weeks in. If it's this bad already, people are not going to stick around for much longer. for much more of this bullshit. And the last thing you want to do is to be stuck with a multi-billion dollar project, probably, or multi-million dollar project at the very least. And the team folds up and packs up and has to leave and go somewhere else. You have to commit to Jacksonville staying here through at least the first year after the stadium is built, if not at least three. Because otherwise the city's going to eat their ass on making this, and it's not, everybody's going to be mad. But hey, sucks to suck. Anyway, got a little spiraled off there, but congratulations to my Chicago Bears. Love those guys. They did a great job. Caleb Williams looked like an absolute stud out there on the field. He was actually using his feet to get out of some tough situations, took a couple of hits, but was throwing for some good touchdowns. One interception, but four touchdowns on the day. Is putting up some really amazing numbers. He was feeding his receivers out there, which was really awesome. And it was just great to see him. You know what I mean? So Cole Kmet got two. Keenan Allen got two. And DeAndre Swift pulled up with one. The Jaguars had nothing for him. They had nothing for him. It's going to be interesting to see what goes on in the next week as we're coming up right now into week 7. This is going to be a rough one. Jags are going against the Patriots this week. They're both 1-5, so I don't know. That's a toss-up. I would say I'd bet on one of them or whatever, but I don't know. Maybe the Jaguars come out with this after being humiliated for most of the first 6 weeks of the season. They, start to smell themselves a little bit and step up a little bit. I don't know. The Steelers playing the Jets also on Sunday. That's going to be at 8:20 p.m. The Jags are playing, at 9:30 in the morning because they're over in London still. But the Jets and the Steelers, man, I'm going to have to go with the Steelers on this one. 4-2 against 2-4 Jets. But the Steelers have been consistent, even if they haven't been excellent every time. So it's pretty interesting to watch them come into some more of their own this year, which is really fun. Watching your team suddenly rally up and get oh shit, here we go, we're gonna make it happen. That's always good. Chicago has a bye week, so they won't be back until after next podcast. Enjoy it. Very well earned. Sorry for your luck, Jags, but go Bears. Good job on the win. My boys just showed up real good. All right. Before I wrap it up for this week, I want to tell you there's a couple things that I've been watching recently. Some of it's old, some of it's just new to me, some of it is new. One show I was watching recently is called The Terror on Netflix. Formerly, it was on AMC. This is a very interesting kind of show. I don't do horror as a rule. I don't like scary stuff. It freaks me out. I have nightmares and all that jazz. But this show, The Terror, has a lot of the hallmarks of what you would think a classic horror film might be, and then a creature film, which I do like creature films. But it also has some interesting social and historical commentary as well. It's incredibly well done, very well acted. And overall, if you're paying attention, you kind of see where the end is going to be. But at the same time, you're also what is actually happening right now? It's a really fun show to watch. I think 10 episodes, take a weekend, watch it with the friends or fam, whatever. I think you'll enjoy it. Also on Netflix, which is getting everything now. I think maybe because Crunchyroll is starting to fall apart. Let's hope. Crunchyroll's the devil right now. Depending on how you choose to pronounce it. I pronounce it word or do food. Sound like the Swedish chef, right? Dandadan is an interesting and very well stylized anime. A boy and a girl in high school who are kind of on opposite ends of the high school pecking order / social spectrum come together over some somewhat similar shared interests and discover that they have supernatural powers. And then they go about trying to find out how these powers came to be and how they relate to the interests that they have shared in common. And there's an interesting kind of, it's almost like a rom-com with action and a little bent of the supernatural in there, the show Supernatural. So there's comedy, there's action, there's a little bit of romance, a little bit of you know, high drama, but it's all gonna, it's all put together in a really excellent package. The characters are interesting and peculiar enough in and of themselves, but also witty enough in their interactions that I've enjoyed it. I think if you like anime and if you like that type of genre, you will too. And last but not least is the remake of Ranma Half, which is an older, much, much older, like when I'm talking about when I was a kid in school, animation, and it's been reimagined now on Netflix. Two episodes are currently out. By the time this hits your ears, maybe the third episode will be either out or on its way. Ranma Saotome and his father, Gemma Saotome, are martial artists, and they travel the world in search of ways to increase in their skills. And while on a training journey, they fall into a set of cursed hot springs. The curse is essentially this. when either is exposed to cold water, their body transforms. Genma Saotome transforms into a panda, like a giant panda bear. And Ranma, his son, transforms from a boy into a girl. So it's interesting hijinks. It was obviously in the earlier iterations of the anime, it was a little bit more spicy, a little bit more saucy. Some of that has been toned down for more modern sensibility regarding sexuality and gender identity and stuff like that. So some of the more prurient jokes that you might have seen in the original are either toned down or omitted or changed around to spun on their ear, but there is still a little bit of that there. I think if you enjoyed the original series, whether it was the manga, the anime, or the video games that the Ranma Half franchise spawned, I think you'll find some good company here. So go and give those a look, and you have something fun to watch this weekend. If you're not watching football, check those out. Also, if you got any suggestions, recommendations, comments, questions, email me over at patreon.com/wanderingonestudios. Let me know. I'd like to get some more content. I'm really excited about this new episode that I'm going to put together, and I hope you guys enjoy it as much as I have as we celebrate the 1 year anniversary of the Wandering One podcast. Thank you so much to everybody out there. It would not have been possible without you, sincerely. Not just your support, whether it was on Patreon or through the Twitch channel on twitch.tv/linkib, but just telling a friend, sharing it in your social circles. Coming back to listen every week, which super duper does help. And again, like I said, if you see it somewhere, comment, rate, review it if you can. Otherwise, yeah, just hit me up on Patreon. Let me know what you think. I'd be really interested to read it. And I want to hear more from you guys and engage with you more directly. So please help me out there. All right, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Wandering One podcast. And I hope you guys have had a good one. I hope things are trend up a little bit more, but except for the weather, I want that to trend down and cool off and no more hurricanes. I've been Link Flores. You guys have been amazing, and I'll catch you a little further on down the road. Peace.